You've likely heard the criticism that Facebook has censored Republicans on its platform, or that X, the company formerly known as Twitter, is giving too much voice to far-right hate speech now that Elon Musk is the owner. But tech industry observers say there's something else going on that's a lot more subtle and more difficult to detect. They call it shadow banning. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me in this recorded interview to talk about shadow banning, what it is and why it matters, is University of Cincinnati political science professor Jeffrey Blevins. Welcome back, Jeff.
Thank you, Lucy. Always good to be here.
UC is a financial supporter of Cincinnati Public Radio. Jeff, what is shadow banning?
Well, it's the idea that, you know, you post something on your social media feed, and you assume that it will appear in, you know, the feeds of people that follow you, but it's possible for the social media platform to mute that so that that it doesn't appear as prominently as you might think that it does. What is the real tricky widget about shadow banning? It is that it is incredibly difficult to prove. There have been, you know, some studies that have shown how this can work, but it's also still kind of hypothetical in a lot of ways.
Tell me what you mean by that. Why do you say it's still kind of hypothetical?
Well, being a scientist, I like to be able to prove things empirically. And ultimately, we really don't know what goes into the secret sauce of some of these algorithms that platforms use. These are, you know, commercial assets. And, you know, we as the public, those in government at present are not entitled to, you know, to have that information. It's proprietary.
So the big problem is that we don't know what the algorithms are, what they do. And so there's no way to analyze what they're doing, and what they're not doing, huh?
Exactly. And I think this has been a key sticking point for a lot of, proposed legislation. It's like, well, we've got to regulate social media platforms. Well, what's the real purpose of that? And, you know, is it even possible to be successful in doing so, right? If you're going to make these platforms responsible for, you know, everything that they you know put out, and they live off of third party content, right? Well, then social media stops existing to really be an immediate social platform.
For the people who do think that shadow banning is happening, what kind of content are their concerns that's being hidden?
Well, the primary concern is that it is political in nature, right? But for me, that's only really a problem if we think about, you know, social media platforms as, you know, a town square. And I think a lot of people think of them that way. But the way that the law looks at it is they are not town squares, right? These are not public spaces. These are commercial spaces and private spaces. And that is really, you know, the nature of their being. So we want to, you know, to use them, you know, for, you know, political campaigns, for, you know, political discourse. But that is really what they're not necessarily centered that way. But then we do have, on the other hand, you know, some media owners who do bring a very strong political perspective. We've seen this, you know, most recently with Elon Musk when he took over Twitter, changed it to X. But we also have a legacy version of that, too. If you look at, for instance, Fox News cable network and Rupert Murdoch.
You mentioned political posts, but there's been some reporting that says even a post with the word vote could be hidden in these shadow bans. I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be some kind of inflammatory political post, does it?
No, it doesn't. And, you know, how many times have, you know, users, you know, been, you know, warned or had something, you know, taken down simply because it was misunderstood by, you know, the algorithm that was, trying to, police its own content, right? And social media platforms, they have their own terms of service, but they really have no legal obligation to follow what their own terms of service are. They decide what that is and how they wish to enforce them, and if they do at all.
You mentioned that a lot of people think of these social media platforms as kind of a town square. It seems to me that some of the platforms try to position themselves that way when it makes sense for them, don't they? I mean, haven't they kind of given off that impression over the years?
Absolutely, they have done that. And because they simply want more and more engagement, right? But that's it's also we have to think again, these are commercial spaces, and so when they pitch themselves that way, it's really kind of puffery. We have to be a little bit sharper than that to to A, know whether or not, okay, this particular platform has a certain political persuasion. And to also keep in mind that these are still primarily commercial spaces.
Let's bring in Washington Post consumer technology reporter Tatum Hunter into the conversation. Thanks for joining us, Tatum.
Thanks for having me.
Tatum, why might companies be doing this? What's the explanation?
Well, there's a lot of pressure on social media companies from advertisers, their customers, and users, which kind of keep the wheels turning, to not have content on there that is offensive or hate speech, or even just makes people uncomfortable, right? Depending on who you're talking to. So, companies do this in the interest of their revenue, right? Not necessarily in the interest of users. And because they have such diverse people using the app, there's a lot of demands from a lot of different people. So maybe there's parents saying, we want less content that could be perceived as sexual. And then there's artists saying, why is my work getting taken down? I use nudity in my artwork. So companies are in a tough spot.
Tatum, we were talking. Jeff was just telling us about how the fact that these algorithms are not clear and we don't know what the secret sauce is makes it hard to really quantify how much this is happening. What are the indications that you've seen in your reporting, that your colleagues at the Washington Post have seen in their reporting, that make you think that this shadow banning is happening to a large degree?
Well, companies will say on the record that they will hide people's posts from their algorithmic feeds if that post violates their recommendation standards. So that's different than, the community guidelines where you can, get kicked off the app. This is what will we put in our algorithmic feed? And they'll tell you that straight up, but they won't tell you exactly what gets you suppressed or kicked off that feed. So for example, a couple weeks ago, I contacted all the major social media companies asking if they would allow users to say the word vote. And TikTok was the only company to confirm on the record that users can say that word without getting algorithmically suppressed. So shadow bans exist, but if you pretend to know too much about them, you're probably lying because the companies keep this very, very vague.
We're talking in this recorded interview about shadow banning, what it is, and why it matters. So, Jeff, is this censorship?
Well, now you're going to force me to put my media law professor cap back on and say, well, no, censorship, at least in the US sense of things, is only something that the government can do. If we, look at the First Amendment, a lot of times, conventionally, people tend to think of it, oh, is it, this is a positive freedom. It's giving us something. Well, really, it's a negative freedom. The Constitution, gives power, limits power, and here it's simply limiting government power over expression. And when we think about, social media platforms, although a lot of people think of them colloquially as, town squares, these are private commercial spaces. And so the platforms, although they do vend third-party content, they are also entitled to First Amendment, protection to suppress speech that they want to suppress.
Jeff, if posts that include words like vote, for example, which Tatum was just talking about, if those posts are hidden on some platforms, what, if any, implications could this have for this year's election?
Well, it's difficult, you know, to say. I'm going to put my political scientist hat back on. Most people are going to vote that are really active in a certain party, right? If you are, a hardline, Democrat or a hardline Republican, you're going to vote. There's always, kind of the tip of the capstone, if you will, the swing voters. And, social media is not the only place that they're getting political information. If they're watching television, if they're passing billboards and signs, they're getting, political information put in front of them.
It seems like the October surprise in this election is Elon Musk and his big cash giveaway for signing his petition. Then Slate has reported that Meta's Mark Zuckerberg has apparently blocked links to stories about Trump's pro-Hitler comments. Tatum, I'm not sure if you've reported on this, but what role, if any, are tech billionaires playing in the political process and the debate over free speech in this election?
Well, Mark Zuckerberg is a great example here because, he's said in the past that, Facebook should have a role, in the democratic process, because as you mentioned, it's a place to gather and discuss. And then he's really done a 180, of saying, I'm done apologizing, for offensive content on the platform. And Meta has, said quite explicitly that it suppresses political speech because, according to them, their users don't like it. And maybe you could infer that their advertisers don't like it either. So in that sense, Mark Zuckerberg, a single man, has had a major impact on what the kind of conversations we can have about this upcoming election and where.
What do you think, Jeff? What role, if any, do you think these tech billionaires are playing in the political process this year?
Well, I agree with what Tatum said, and it certainly it's very clear cut in Musk's case because when X was Twitter, let's face it, it was pretty much, I would say, a more liberal-leaning platform. It was certainly the bread and butter of a lot of journalists. And we've had a lot of, progressives who have left that platform, they're unhappy with him and the direction that he's taken things. And maybe they've gone to other platforms like, Blue Sky, which I still think is in its, beta stage, or Threads. But neither of those platforms has really emerged or become what X was. So there is, or what X is, or I should say, what Twitter was. Pardon me. So there is, less opportunity for that kind of, I would say, conversation.
Tatum, is there any evidence that companies have been doing more shadow banning because of political motivations?
Companies have certainly built out their lists of content that is not eligible for recommendation or appearing on their algorithmic feeds, and they've also really clarified at least the fact that they are going to suppress some content algorithmically. It's hard to say the scale because companies really hold this close to the vest. So I don't think that we could say there's evidence that companies are suppressing more speech, unless you look at an example like Meta, where they've really, said very straight up that Meta platforms are not a place for political discussion. And the term shadow ban, really, spiked in popularity in the late 2010s. And that was kind of the term we used to describe, the word shadow, kind of refers to the fact that what's happening here, we don't understand why our posts aren't getting seen or why things are getting taken down. And now the term that, most experts use, at least, is algorithmic suppression, or, or companies say, you know, recommendation eligibility. So we've almost moved away from the term because while we don't know much, we at least know more than we knew in the late 2010s.
Jeff, is there evidence that this practice is having a measurable effect on public opinion or public perception, or is it hard to measure that because of the just slippery nature of all this?
Yeah, well, it's certainly it's difficult to pinpoint the cause. You know, some of the things that that I've discovered in my own research is that you know that well, okay, let's look at the types of content that does resonate with users, and a lot of that tends to be emotionally you know charged content, right? So you know things that you know make us angry. Things that you know worry us, that type of content tends to get you know commented on, shared, is more likely you know to go viral. But you know to say whether that's the result of certain things being you know pushed by the algorithm or suppressed, again, very difficult to you know to make a cause and effect argument there.
Tatum, what are the implications for of this for access to news and the free press and just the free exchange of ideas?
Yeah, so research has shown that a growing proportion of Americans, particularly young people, get their news from social media. So the decisions that these companies make about what gets served to people could have a huge effect on what type of political discourse people are able to participate in. And I think another thing worth mentioning is kind of social atomization during the pandemic. You know, some people might find themselves in air quotes third places, you know, maybe church or a coffee shop or a community gathering less. And those were places, you know, where you might have had a political discussion. Now, the more we rely on social media for both information and analysis, the bigger these decisions matter, or the more they matter.
What do you think, Jeff? What do you think the implications of this are for access to news, the free press, just the exchange of ideas?
I think it's done a great disservice, but I don't know how the you know how we put the genie back in the bottle in this case, because you know that is the primary means by which so many you know people are getting information, but it's also the way that they're getting disinformation, and then they're sharing things from you know that are they're completely misinformed about, and I think it's done a great disservice to the truth and to what you know the institutions of journalism that we used to uphold or you know of expertise where now it tends to be kind of a free-for-all informationally and the loudest and the most emotionally charged you know discourse is tends to what gets most of the attention.
Tatum, is it true that a lot of social media sites are just the algorithms are putting less emphasis on stories from media outlets or posts from media outlets, for example? I mean, when Facebook first came along, that was something that a lot of news organizations did, but it seems like those kinds of posts get a lot less traction now, too.
Yeah, I mean, it also causes anxiety for a lot of media people on X, you know, where it's like, is my post getting suppressed when it links to a third party site? You know, that's kind of unclear. So yeah, absolutely. And as Jeff said, when that friction is put up, you know, because obviously these platforms want to keep people on platform. They don't want to be sending them off to third party news sites to read an entire 800 word article with context and analysis. They want people to be either, you know, looking at short form video or looking at tiny bites of text. And so I think that that has a really big impact because it democratizes information in a way that isn't always beneficial.
Tatum, as a social media user, can you do anything about this shadow banning? Are there changes you can make to your settings to see some of the content that's maybe being hidden?
Yes, on TikTok, for example, you can go into your content settings and say that you would like to see more or less content about current affairs. TikTok would not define current affairs for me, but I would imagine that it includes political discussions, and that's a dial that you can turn up or down. Also, on Instagram, for example, they have a quote sensitive content, you know, limit. And the creators of that content that falls into that bucket are getting their posts suppressed if you leave that off. But you can go in and you can turn it back on. So these platforms in many cases do let you toggle how much of this you see. And of course, the problem is that there's still no transparency or visibility for the user into exactly what's going on behind the scenes.
Well, I've been talking with University of Cincinnati political science professor Jeffrey Blevins and Washington Post consumer technology reporter Tatum Hunter. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you, Lucy.
Thank you.
Up next, we'll hear from a social psychiatrist who says the urban renewal projects that happened across the nation decades ago caused trauma that continues today. This is Cincinnati Edition.